There are two stories today about the South Korean electronics company Samsung. It's at the U.S. Supreme Court on a key intellectual property case, and there's news Samsung's flagship phone is done. Finito. From Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. Samsung stock plunged in Seoul today, and that's even before the confirmation came that the fire-prone Galaxy Note 7, Samsung's top-of-the-line phone, is being permanently discontinued. It had been recalled, supposedly fixed, but then some of the fixed ones also began overheating. Now the bulletin, permanently discontinued. The question without an answer now is, what's the plan if you have one of those phones, other than turning it off and unplugging it now? I just spoke to the BBC's Lisha Chi, who's covering this from Singapore.
Samsung has sent out a very brief one-line statement just saying that they were discontinuing production of the Galaxy Note. They didn't actually give any details as to what users can do with their existing contracts, and I personally think that might have to come from the individual telcos, given they differ from market to market. So, for example, Telstra in Australia or Singtel in Singapore or Vodafone in the UK. But Samsung is clearly still trying to contain the fallout from this safety scandal. Shares of the firm today slipped by 8%, and that wiped off another $17 billion in market value because of this safety scandal. So clearly they think that this phone has no future, and they will have to come up with another device to combat rivals like Apple and their iPhone 7.
Also today, lawyers for aforementioned Samsung and rival Apple are at the U.S. Supreme Court. It's a long-running design patent infringement case, and the piece at hand is how much Samsung will have to really pay in damages. A federal appeals court had gone with $400 million, reduced from the nearly $1 billion original judgment. Marketplace's senior tech correspondent Molly Wood says lots of other big tech players are lending their voice to this.
Now, a lot of heavy hitters in tech have filed amicus briefs. They're on Samsung's side because as design has become more important in technology in particular, and design patents have gotten more prevalent, and let's be honest, designs are so similar, all wearables basically look alike, there's a lot more potential for abuse and trolling. Now, ironically, Samsung did push the design envelope with some of its newer phones, like the Edge lines. They have this cool curved screen, and they've actually gotten a lot of accolades. So you could argue that had they been, edgier all along, they might have not found themselves in this mess in the first place.
All right, Molly, thank you. Checking the markets, the 100 share index in London, the FTSE, is up about 0.3% now. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are down in the 1 to 0.2% range, minus 22 points on the Dow future. Now, there may be a cost to flexible work hours or working from home. From the Marketplace desk at Oregon Public Broadcasting, Mitchell Hartman reports on new research.
Princeton economist Alex Moss and a colleague ran an experiment.
So what we did is we asked workers applying for a real job at a national call center for their preferences.
Between different work arrangements, a flexible schedule, working from home, a variable shifting schedule set by the employer. Here's what applicants said.
They are not willing to take even a small 50-cent pay cut in order to have flexibility. Workers, however, really like working from home.
In fact, they'll take 8% lower pay to get that. And they'll take 20% less to get a regular weekday schedule 9 to 5. Andrew Stettner at the Century Foundation says many managers in retail and hospitality now use software
to pinpoint exactly how many people they need on the floor, depending on different times of day or varying on the sales, and send people home.
And that means many workers have schedules that vary day to day. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
People don't attend houses of worship like they used to in America. Many churches are consolidating or shutting down. Developers are eyeing the properties. In Pittsburgh, there's a brewery restaurant and a deconsecrated church where the copper beer vats are up where the altar used to be. Bobby Allen of WHYY in Philadelphia looks at the wider trend.
Developer Leo Volosian is standing in front of an empty church in Philly's trendy Fishtown neighborhood.
It has tall, majestic spires. They have a beautiful green patina. The church is just awe-inspiring.
The 1880s church has been sitting unused since 2013.
You walk in and you look up and the baby blue ceiling is really just kind of brings it all to life.
If Volosian's vision comes true, the only people who will see that baby blue ceiling will be the second floor renters. He plans to redevelop the closed church into 23 single-bedroom apartments. More than a quarter of former houses of worship in the Philly area have been converted into housing. Bob Yeager isn't surprised. He leads Partners for Sacred Places, a nonprofit group that helps congregations preserve old worship sites.
Developers are naturally looking to these buildings to think about how they could be sensitively reused in a way that would preserve that character.
He says he's seeing this happen in Chicago, New York, and parts of New England. Driving the demand are people like Melissa McCormick. She's an Austin transplant who recently moved into a converted stone church with a big clock tower on a corner in Southwest Philly. It's been renamed Sanctuary Lofts. One-bedroom rentals start for $1,500 a month.
It feels a little less like gentrification just because, at least in the case of this building, it was just standing here abandoned before.
Kate Davis-Horan has a different view. She lives next to the church to apartment proposal back in Philly's Fishtown.
I don't want to see the building get torn down, but I do think we can do better than 23 teeny tiny units in this historical building.
Yeager says when a church takes on a new life as apartments, neighbors can feel like something was lost.
It doesn't house programs for the arts anymore. It doesn't serve kids anymore. It doesn't serve the homeless anymore. It doesn't feed anybody anymore.
But it does feed the ever-growing demand for city housing. In Philadelphia, I'm Bobby Allen for Marketplace.
Our producers are Justin Ho, Katie Long, and Chris Olin. Our engineer this week is Charlton Thorpe. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.